Okay, so this now is development. The next session is developing adaptive tutorials using LAMPS and adaptive learning tutorial.
All right, so I changed the title. And it's called LAMPS and Adaptive E-Learning Platform, or Supporting Teachers' Reflection and Adaptation of Adaptive Tutorials. We're not a big crowd, so I'll be very personal. So this is work... This is recent work we've done with LAMPS team, basically Ernie. All right, so I'm going to present recent work we've done with the LAMPS team. Of integrating two systems, two existing systems, into one, into a mashup, into a web-enabled mashup. This is the overview of the presentation. I'm going to stumble on just why bother, what's the rationale, the motivation to it. And I'm going to give you a bit of an overview about what are adaptive tutorials and what is the adaptive e-learning platform. Pardon me that I don't have a screen here, so I need to look to see what's that about. And I also briefly touch about how they are constructed. In fact, this the way they are constructed has concrete implications of how you can use it in your LAMPS sequences if you're interested in. I'm going to show the LAMPS integration and a bit of a demo if possible, and we'll have a bit of questions if there are any. So you might ask yourself, what is it for me? So we're going to be offering the ALP and its learning services to the LAMPS community. If you're interested, talk to me. I'm going to show you basically a new set of tools and a new set of sort of paradigm of how to develop content and what type of content. So and it is a bit extending what is possible with LAMPS. And me means that you can go to adaptiveelearning.com or you can email me at my university mail at drob@csc, UNSW. Come to me afterwards if you want. So this is work in progress, which means what I'm showing you is a potential of a process that is not yet complete. So that means that you have to look through and see the potential. And so anyone recognizes this picture? No? That's the opera, the Sydney Opera House. Yeah. So it's important to show you the work in progress. Okay, that's a disclaimer. So what are adaptive tutorials? Well, there are many ITSs. ITSs, intelligent tutoring systems. That means they're interactive, they're online, they are the order of activity of 40 minutes. They're not in a curriculum resolution, they're in the resolution of an in-class activity or a homework-taking activity. And they're the order of 40 minutes. As I said, they're adaptive. So what does adaptive mean? Adaptive means that we have adaptive feedback, the ability to give the students remediation that is adapted to their misconceptions and their mistakes and their performance. Adaptive sequence, the ability to sequence a range of activities based on ongoing evaluation of the student's learning level. And we also support the concept of teacher reflection and adaptation, where we basically develop tools and technology to enable teachers to reflect and adapt their content. We're building it using something called Adaptive E-Learning Platform, which is a set of tools and technologies that we do. It's a similar concept to how LAMPS is a set of tools. And it's an implementation of virtual apparatus framework, which I'm going to touch in a second, because it's the design principle, the pedagogical design principle, which has, the, as I said, implications of whether or not you'll be using it. So another pedagogical disclaimer I like to make is that people ask me if it's dialogic or constructivist or instructivist, whether it's discovery learning or maybe it's guided. What about cognitive load theory? Do you support scaffolding, faded scaffolding? And how is it adaptive? Is it really intelligent, collaborative, threshold concept, interactive? So there's a lot of pedagogical, you know, jargon we can use to describe learning sequences or activities or whatnot. And my answer is that, you know, it's really up to you. It's technology. In the same way, PowerPoint is a technology that you can create presentations, and then your presentation could be instructivist or constructivist or whatnot. So it's a bit touching on the James's concept of pedagogical neutrality. What is virtual apparatus framework? Well, it's a content development approach that is based on a teaching lab. So what is the story? One second, where's my mouse? Oh. So the story, and apologies to anyone who's seen it before, is that we can think of developing a teaching lab as the following sequence. We first get a teacher in a experiment desk, and we'll bring some apparatus on that experiment desk. And we will set that apparatus to some initial state, and we will create experiment nodes, which means we will define the correct state that the apparatus should be brought to by the student. So we can already draw similarities from the content development paradigm to fields of sciences and engineering and medicine, where the laboratory activities are existing. And we bring the students who will interact with the apparatus while the teacher supervises and offer remediation, and we'll take some evaluation performance. So that's straightforward paradigm for development content. There's nothing special about it. It's just very easy for the teachers to understand. Now let's think about how create virtual environments that exhibit similar characteristics. So instead of a lab, we'll use a virtual lab, and instead of apparatus, we'll bring virtual apparatus. That would be a simulation. Likewise, we will set it up to some initial state, and we'll create some experiment nodes. We'll bring the students who will interact with it, but then how will the teacher supervise, and how will it offer remediation during the activity, and how will it evaluate the activity? We can typically evaluate by SCORM protocols or some way that the environment can spit out a number, a grade. So that's okay. So the question we ask ourselves is how. So here's how. We will pretend that the teacher is behind a wall and is not an expert, and now the teacher is really the system. Imagine that you are in that laboratory and the student is working. What would you do? How would you offer intelligent remediation? How would you offer adaptive feedback? Well, you'll ask the students when they need help to tell you what exactly is the current state of their experiment. And the students will basically fill up that list of properties that describe their current state and will send it to you. And you will basically, if you were in under these circumstances, you would be comparing what the students have done with your pre-existing list of feedbacks. And then you will be able to attach feedback to this help. So if a student's basically, if this happened, we know how to do that. And then we can think of an activity as bringing some abstract concepts of an initial state to a correct state, and every other possibility of configuration of properties will be trapped to become a trapped state, and we will attach feedback to it. So that's... I need to do something like that right now. Right. So, oops. So it is a bit of a terminology shuffle for some of us. But it's good for teachers because it's clear what the role is. So in this paradigm I just showed you, it's clear what the teachers should do. And it's also good for developers, the people who build those apparatus, because it's clear what their role is. And it maps well to the domains where we're not thinking in terms of teaching labs. So an example of adaptive tutorials, I'm not going to go into depth. I'm going to briefly explain and spend less than a minute on the examples. So how long we had?
You got 10 minutes.
10 minutes. So the idea is that here in this activity, students pick up a pipette and put different substances into an oxygen electrode that is connected to a graph. The students can then sort of take measurements on the graph and calculate the slope and basically do an activity that is really resembles what's possible in a lab. But the richness of it is that this system intelligently monitor what the students are doing and able to offer them remediation and scaffolding and help based on their action. So this is really high-end interactive things that are also adaptive and intelligent. Similar activity in mechanical engineering. This time we look at a bridge and we put different sensors on a bridge and we drive a car and we take measurements. Again, the idea of an experiment, learning by doing, but also scaffolding and remediated. This is in a virtual microscopy in pathology. Here, students are using a virtual microscope, which is a way to look into high-resolution scans of tissue. And they need to annotate it and identify which cells are the cancerous and which are the neurons and whatnot. And again, it's interactive with the content as opposed to just absorbing it one direction. Mechanical engineers, we also have the ability to actually drawing their own version of a graph that represents forces on a beam, for example. And the system sort of looks at the interaction of how they're drawing it and help them and said, no, this line is incorrect, this value is correct, try again, and so forth. Electrical engineering, I guess, less interesting. Physics, the classical laboratories with oscilloscopes and magnets and coils and so forth. About the LAMMPS integration. So the adaptive e-learning platform is a full-on environment a fully complete environment to create adaptive tutorials and then author them, add the adaptivity, launch them into learning management systems, launching them as URLs, into wikis, and so forth. It's a standalone system. Where is it lacking? It was lacking because it was a problem that we were trying to face was how to contextualize it into an educational sequence. So what happened if I want my students to read something and then go and do another laboratory? Or what happened if after a laboratory I want to go and make a discussion about it or chat about it and so forth? So instead of us implementing all these kind of tools in our system, the idea was born that let's integrate into LAMS and let's make adaptive tutorials first-class citizens in LAMS sequences. So this is the integration architecture. Where's my mouse? We've got typical LMSs, Moodle or Blackboard or whatnot, and we can put LAMS sequences in them. And one such activity can be an adaptive tutorial. And another layer of customization is when the virtual apparatus itself can be customized by the teachers. So if we need a different laboratory, maybe a different setting for a different, maybe second year course, so maybe it's a bit more complex and there's a bit more substances that the students, for example, would be using, we can configure the virtual apparatus using something we call the virtual apparatus service, which is an equivalent of a LAMS tool, how you configure, let's say, your chat room or your message board or your question. It's you launch a separate window and you configure it there. Likewise, we have ability to configure the virtual apparatuses. And again, we use the concept of virtual apparatus as the simulation bit, as the non-pedagogical bit, the interaction bit. But we need to configure it. So this is the integration architecture. And why do we even bother? As I said before, I actually went through this. So we wanted to contextualize adaptive tutorials into pedagogical sequences. And it turns out that the concept of a virtual apparatus, the way we think about the interactive bit of an adaptive tutorial, maps very well to the concept of LAMS tools. So it was almost straightforward for us from a sort of architectural and approach to integrate. Here's a demo. Okay, so this is a familiar interface for most of you. And we made adaptive tutorials first-class citizen in LAMS, so you can just literally drag them, and then you can double-click on them. And hopefully that will work. I mean, I'm running Localhost, so there is a bit of a bug, and as I told you, this is... So I'm missing the picture here, again, work in progress. But the thing is that I can select from a predefined set of adaptive tutorials that I already have in my system. So again, the integration is very... how should I put it? It's not a deep integration. So the strength of what we've done is that we've been a very, very simple integration in the level of like ability to communicate between the systems, and that's it. So it's like basically it's like publishing, articulate things in such a format that you can throw in different LMSs. So I can decide which adaptive tutorials, I can also create a new one. So let's create a new one and new AT. Hey, Ernie, how much? What are we doing for time?
Four minutes.
So then I created a new one and just telling the system that I've got a new one. And then I can go and author it. And authoring is going to pop up another page. And that's the authoring environment of the adaptive e-learning platform. So from here, I'm not going to go into the explanation of how I'm loading, how I'm creating adaptive tutorials, because this is beyond sort of this is like explaining you the details of the adaptive e-learning platform. But I will just mention that I can simply choose the the virtual apparatuses I want, and then and basically take it from there. So you can think of this as a way to
create the initial configuration.
Yeah. And then, okay, so here's an activity. Okay, there's no questions right now, and I didn't add the adaptivity and conditions and so forth, but it's a rich environment for the creations and synthesis of these. So basically, I will close it now, and let me close just that one, otherwise that wouldn't be cool. All right, and back into LAMS. I can actually, this one. I'm going to go to the bank to the pre-configured one I have already, and I'm going to save it. Then I can close and do that. And now I can basically, I just made a very simple sequence, throwing a multiple choice at the end without even question in it just to show the concept. So now, when I'm running this preview, as I said, the adaptive tutorial is a first-class citizen in LAMMPS, which means it's just seamlessly integrated as if it was any other LAMMPS tool. And now you can think of it...
So
yes.
There's no finish button. Are you assigned out to the top?
No, there's no finish button because you have to actually do the question. Right, and in this question, you necessitates the students to actually play around with this coil, actually investigate an active a phenomena. I have very simple, superficial feedback here. If you get it wrong, I'm telling you, you're wrong, and if I'm getting you right, we continue. And this is a very simple adaptive activity, and that is just for the purpose of demonstrating that the systems communicate. So basically, you got it right. The students basically solved it. And then jumping, we can continue to that's the finish button. Here's the finish button, and here's the LAMMPS sequence. All right, so I think I will spend exactly 30 seconds showing you. So I showed the demonstration of capability. The summary of the integration is that that's an unfinished slide. It's also possible too. So two ways. Okay, so... I think I leave it to you to understand what is the power of this. I will just mention that adaptive tutorials also have their own version of a monitor. You know how there's a LAMMPS monitor. And here, it's basically a data mining and visualization tool for investigating the performance of students in this rich environment. So I was asking my students to play around with virtual apparatus, achieve some conditions, take some measurements, input very rich interactions. It's not necessarily simply to explain, you got it right, you got it wrong. It's very rich. And I need tools to mine this data and elevate it and show it to the teacher such that the teacher can take decisions and understand and make sense out of the activity, the so-called phase of reflection and adaptation by the teacher.
And I think this is a really powerful thing. So you can explain how this works, right?
So yeah, so here's an explanation how it worked. We can see that in this particular question, all the students start from initial state, and each sort of column represents a solution attempt. So we see 33 students out of a total of 59 got it right in the first attempt, which means that my question was not necessarily amazingly difficult. It's also interesting to see that 13 students landed in a particular trap state that I made for them. It's called wrong value, which characterizes by if they input, they were calculating something and they were wrong. So I would give them adaptive feedback for this mistake. And this is how we're doing adaptivity. And here's the magic under the hood. It's not really intelligent, because when people hear AI, they get afraid, oh my God, it's an intelligent system. But it's a simple sort of condition system that every teacher can make sense of it. And what I'm using this view for is to inspect what is the input my students actually were inputting. In this case, the solution is 1.13 e to the minus 3. And these two students, you know, were out by a factor of 1,000, which really, really meant that I should maybe give another trap state for them. So these students made a mistake that they missed by a factor of 1,000. I gave them feedback that was like, your input was wrong, try again, or something generic. What I really should do is make another trap state here that targets this misconception, entering like 1.13 instead of 1.13 e to the minus 3, and then those students would land in this help, and I will give them feedback that is tailored for that misconception. And with this, I will stop.
Can you go back to the...
And ask, ready for questions, so yes.
Another very interesting thing that I think Drawer has actually done really well on this approach is the fact that you can always, like, say for instance, the default wrong option in the first column, that actually tells you that 11 guys actually got it wrong. And then effectively from then on, you can actually keep tracking what is the progress when they have a second, a third, and fourth attempt and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you can single out particular individuals and see how many times they tried and then analyze why do they actually get these results. So I think this is not only useful for teachers to see like how their students actually, like one particular student is actually going through interacting with an apparatus. But it's also very important for the teacher to understand why these kids are actually doing these mistakes and what is the thing that is actually making them do these mistakes. And then based on that, you can actually generate...
Can we go back to that slide you have?
Yeah, sure. I actually would like to show you a live version of how you can actually... I can actually show you... somehow if I manage to.
Work this side's okay.
All right.
I think it's got tremendous potential. It's got tremendous potential, and I can straight away can see the potential. It's not actually adaptive in the sense that I understand adaptive test, that the system reacts to the student and then adapts the next question to the response of the first question.
It is. Because I showed you just the slide of what I've showed. It's like a slide through. There's a rich environment. What I showed was I concentrated on adaptive feedback. As if you remember, I mentioned there's three levels of adaptivity: adaptive feedback, adaptive sequencing, and then more like along the line of branching and deciding from based on a mistake what to do.
Okay, but I mean, adaptive testing as an analogy, you've got TOEFL adaptive tests, you've got some Cambridge ESOL adaptive tests, and there is a body, let's say, of people that think that adaptive tests are not the way to go because having a question and then adjusting the question, you're not necessarily testing all the competences of the student by just adjusting to the apparent level of the student. But this system is the adaptive feedback idea. It's quite a good idea, and actually the assessment tool does in a way give adaptive feedback depending on the percentage of questions that are correct. Mm-hmm. And there is some kind of adaptive feedback there as well. But can one? How difficult is it to actually create the... that's the thing that... I'm just looking at the real most practical issue. How difficult is it to train someone to create these images, which are really good?
We created this in a matter of 2 weeks' work.
2 weeks.
Yeah, and the visual view it's looking at is an order of spending of $1,500 of design work.
You need a multimedia design, obviously.
Well, someone has to do that.
Yeah.
And we sort of, so the undertaking all totally of the work that was done into this, the School of Biology spent in the order of $5,000 to Australian dollars, which is, I guess, something like in the order of
$2,000.
To launch this activity.
Oh,
and
this is definitely the future. I
think it's a part of the future.
But is the expense, with Articulate, even though it's cost about $1,000 the Articulate suite, it doesn't do something to this level, but it's taking up, it's going a level higher than PowerPoint or just having some document in shared resources.
The problem we are trying to target is how to arrive to this kind of activities. So you can get, if you're interested in that, you make a grant application to your budgeting body and you will maybe get hire a developer and the person will develop it from scratch or will use some powerful existing tools or maybe will use LAMPS in some form or way. But you will be spending quite a lot of money and you will be building the technology that is not necessarily reusable or can be leveraged. So we concentrated on building technology that basically has a very clear separation of what the concerns of what is the teacher, the pedagogical approach, and the technological development. Mm-hmm. And because we engineered in such a way that the virtual apparatuses are this, we got a warehouse of virtual apparatuses you can then just bring in. So if you want to use that, you can just go and use that and add and so forth.
Yeah, I think this is the real issue with ego now, isn't it? It's the presentation of the materials. The standard now is getting higher and higher, but the trainability of the employees,
tools.
Of the teachers, is limited because of the institution. And you've got this kind of irony in the system that you've got to have this high standard now because of the competition, international competition of e-learning, but then you've got the problem of, you can't train people to use this, so it actually becomes very expensive.
So exactly that's where the virtual practice framework for content is really easy to understand. So if you're an educational activity and want educational institution, you want to offer your students a laboratory work, you're not engaging your teachers by learning how to engineer the content.
You're
going to be buying prefabricated apparatus, and then you can take it from there.
Yeah.
So if our mission was to build the technology that is needed in order to separate those concerns in such a way that the teacher doesn't need to know how to engineer this or doesn't need to hire by himself, maybe just can repurpose an existing virtual apparatus, but can still take it onwards and create these rich activities.
I think another issue is institutions generally don't want to invest money until they can see that there's going to be an income from this source. So they may be hesitant about investing, €10,000 or dollars or whatever in this system before they see the results. Mm-hmm. So there's that issue as well.
Okay, so guys, just to wrap it up, one extra thing that I'd just like to contribute to this is that some of the outputs that you can actually get out of out of this can now also be used to do branching within Lamps. Yeah,
yeah, so, I was going to say that as well. That this is ideal for branching.
Yeah.
Given that you can actually use some of the internal sort of results that students actually might have gotten, like by playing with these tools, then you can actually allow to do branching.
Imagine you are able to branch not only on the score of the activity, or if that's what you want, you can branch on how they were performing in the third questions when we asked them to achieve that, which was something that relates to a particular concept, and then I can branch in LAMS based on that condition. Right. It's a very deep sort of nested sort of conditioning, not only just if the score is less than 5 or more than 5 or something. I can say if the student's misconception was, let's say, welding activity in engineering, if we were doing a simulation and the student's was something related to safety, maybe in a particular question, then we could go and branch on it on the LAMS after they finished and say, all right, now let's get on a safety module. And the others, maybe we don't necessarily need to show that. Okay. So that's just an example.
All right. Joel, thank you very much.
Okay, so
now, Chris, let's